Hello everybody, it's George from Ireland. Welcome back to my panel. And this is about VE Day, Victory in Europe Day, when many Western European countries celebrate the end of the Second World War. So this day, 1945, so the instrument of surrender was signed on the 7th of May, but to go into effect at 1 minute past 11 o'clock at night on the 8th of May, enough time for their Oberkommando der Wehrmacht to contact die Kriegsmarine, Luftwaffe, and I suppose, what would they call it, das Heer, units of the Armee, and say, cessation of all hostilities, surrender to the nearest Allied units, and so on. But 1 minute past 11, in Western European time, France or Germany and so on, that was 1 minute past midnight on the 9th of May. It was already the 9th of May in Moscow. So that's why former Soviet countries usually mark on the 9th of May, Dien Pobiede, Victory Day. Public holiday in most of them. Now, Ukraine, since this Russo-Ukrainian war began on a full scale in February 2022, has shifted to the 8th of May in conformity with Western Europe, but to try and break the link with the Soviet Union, because Putin would always try to say that all Soviet countries, former Soviet countries, should be subjugated by Russia. So the public holiday in many countries, it was Tag der Befreiung in die Deutsche Demokratische Republik. I'm not sure it's a public holiday in Germany these days, as it's sort of Liberation Day. So it was the end of National Socialism and the beginning of the other kind of socialism. Right. Well, obviously, it's a very good thing that the Allies won. Now, there's no question that the Third Reich committed countless atrocities on an absolutely enormous scale, which is not to say that the Allies weren't blamable as well, obviously, particularly the Red Army, and which is not diminishing the severity of the many crimes that the Wehrmacht and the SS committed against Soviet civilians and Red Army prisoners of war. You know, prisoners of war to be treated in conformity with the Geneva Convention and so on. And I think one of the German arguments is that they didn't actually proclaim war. They simply invaded, which is no excuse. It's to be observed even in a warlike situation. So, wow, it was horrific. Now, goodness, well, why did the Allies win? Numbers, for one thing. They had more troops and they're just more of everything, like howitzers, planes, tanks, ships, whatever. They could outproduce them. The German war economy just couldn't keep up to that. You know, at the beginning of the Second World War, there were superpowers, really, the British Empire, the Soviet Union, Germany, the United States, maybe even France. I mean, Italy was fairly powerful. I don't think you can get a superpower. I mean, possibly even Japan. Maybe it's in the second rank. But anyway, so Germany against war against the United Kingdom and France, knocked France out in 1940, a war against one of them, the British Empire. The United Kingdom was the head of that. But then in 1941, took on both the Soviet Union and the United States. That fatal decision to declare war on the United States 3 days after Pearl Harbor in sympathy with the Nipponese. That was a fatal mistake by Adolf Hitler, who was Der Führer of Germany. Goodness. So what were the consequences? Well, obviously, Germany was sundered. They'd agreed that there would be the different occupation zones at Yalta, if I got that right. The Soviet occupation zone at the east, the French one in the very west, bordering France, the American one in the south, and the British one at the north, adjacent to the North Sea, Hanover, which had strong historic links with the United Kingdom, the Hanseatic League and so on, those leagues of trading German ports. And even London was part of the Hanseatic League. George VI's great-great-grandfather had indeed been King of Hanover, and his distant cousin was still the King of Hanover in those times, related to mostly to a lot of German aristocrats and royalty. So what are the other consequences? The Soviet Union got much stronger, moved its unofficial frontier about 1,000 kilometers to the west, creating various communist satellite states. And they were supposed to have democratic elections. But then there was the naughty document, the percentages agreement, which Churchill signed with Stalin in late 1944. Roosevelt wasn't there. Roosevelt never traveled to the Soviet Union, apart from Yalta, never traveled to Moscow, about how much influence each wants to have. And Stalin got it mostly in Poland and so on. But even when it's going to be 50-50, like Hungary, effectively the communists took over. The Soviets imposed their own handpicked communists and no free elections, no free speech. People sent to slave labor camps. So it was a new form of oppression, not quite as murderous as the National Socialism that it had supplanted. So they're definitely Allied war crimes too. You know, and it'd be ridiculous to say that all Germans are bad, are the only bad ones, don't want racism in any direction, and that includes against Germans as well. And I'm not denying or downplaying the Holocaust. And we always talk about Jews. Okay, it's true about 6 million Jews murdered by the Third Reich. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Let's look at the other groups who are often overlooked, like gypsies, like gay men, lesbian women, Jehovah's Witnesses, pacifists, I mean, political prisoners, Soviet prisoners of war, and on, physically and mentally handicapped people. So we could be here all day with the people who are victims of National Socialism. So it's a horrific ideology, and I'm very glad it's gone and never going to come back. One of the other consequences, whenever there's a confrontation, politicians say, this is the Second World War over again. We have to fight. So-and-so is the new Hitler, and you're appeasing otherwise. Appeasement sometimes works, right? We have numerous examples about that. Let's say Thailand caving into French threats, giving some territory. France got it. They didn't take over the whole of Thailand. Okay, it worked for them. India, Pakistan, countries are telling you have to appease people who are neutral. Politicians are neutral. Leaders are neutral, say appeasement. That's the way forward, and so on. What else? The United States was obviously hugely economically dominant at the end of the Second World War. Much of Western Europe was just wrecked. The United Kingdom was bankrupt, almost 25% of its national wealth spent. It precipitated the dissolution of the British Empire. You know, Indian independence came in 1947. Churchill has said in 1942, I did not become the King's first minister to preside over the liquidation of the British Empire. But he did, and he agreed to it reluctantly. And obviously the Cripps mission, Stafford Cripps, the Labour cabinet minister, flying out to meet Congress and Muslim League politicians and promise publicly independence would be granted within 3 years of the defeat of Japan. And it happened 2 years to the day, not three, that Japan surrendered. So the war was still going on against Japan after VE Day. Other consequences, about 60 million deaths, borders redrawn. Obviously, the Soviet Union collaborated with the Third Reich in starting the Second World War, attacking Poland, and that land that the Soviets stole from Poland, they got to keep. Poland shunted a few hundred kilometers further west, and Poland was compensated with land taken from Germany. You know, about 500,000 German civilians killed after the war. So one of the great untold stories of such anti-German bigotry. So no one should be killed, you know, civilians. Right, they're going to be combat deaths of military personnel of wartime. I accept that. But civilians must never be targeted, and they were. And I know you're going to say, well, that's because the Third Reich had murdered so many civilians of other nationalities. And that's true, but it still doesn't make it right. And millions of them were refugees. So post-1945 Germany, a huge percentage, like 20% were refugees. You know, Königsberg became part of the Russian Federation, Kaliningrad, and so forth. So some of Ukraine even belonged to Poland or Hungary beforehand. What else? Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Moldova, all bludgeoned states, illegally annexed by the Soviet Union, heavily oppressed, terrorized by Stalin. They remained prisoners of the Soviet Union. Even the land the Soviets taken from Finland, they got to keep. So these are some of the consequences people don't like to take, they don't like to face up to, because it's not this good versus evil narrative. Why was the war started? Supposedly because the invasion of Poland, all right? The United Kingdom invaded a neutral country in the war. Iran, the Soviets invaded Iran. Most people in the former Soviet Union, UK, don't know that. Every Iranian knows that. And so on. The French and British were preparing to invade Norway. The Germans did it first. So it's not clear cut. People are lying to themselves. A lot of myth making about this. You know, Germany had some arguable case to tiny sections of Poland, particularly Danzig, the supposed free city under League of Nations superintendents. And Poland simply took it anyway. But they had no claim to most of Poland. And no question, Germany was responsible for the war, not Poland. Okay. Was legally responsible and so forth. And there were large-scale atrocities against Polish civilians almost from day one, rounding up civilians and shooting them dead in the hundreds. No mistake, not collateral damage. But it's not true to say that Germany had no claim on any Polish territory whatsoever. Didn't say it's a watertight claim, but some sort of arguable case for a small percentage of Polish territory. Poland, it was still legally Polish sovereign soil. Poland was morally entitled to fight for it, okay? But there was some arguable case. Just because Nazism was wicked, and it certainly was foul, that doesn't mean that Germany had no claim on even a small section of Polish territory. Anyway, Germany should not have started the war. Hermann Göring, evil, evil monster though he was correct. There was no need to start this. Germany was an associated state. Should have quit whilst they're ahead. The Poles were going to fight. The French and British were going to declare war, which no one else in the National Socialist leadership thought was going to happen. Well, I'm very glad I live in peace. Shouldn't be too much tub-thumping of triumphalism. Obviously, I salute people who fought, but there can be gallantry on both sides. And just because someone's on the Allied side doesn't automatically mean this person was morally upstanding. And just because someone happened to be Italian, Japanese, German, or whatever, doesn't mean that person was wicked. Goodness, it's just not like that, that evil people belong to one nationality and good people belong to another. And why do people fight? I mean, my country, right or wrong, narrow-mindedness, following the crowd, because if you're called a traitor, if you state these unwelcome truths, what else? Yeah, the emotional purchase of nationalism on people out of self-preservation, fear. Well, if we do, they're going to kill us if we don't kill them. The idea that the toughness, that violence is somehow manly and morally uplifting, all these sick tropes, that's what spurs people to fight. Well, I'm very, very glad I've never been anywhere near a war. I'm not a pacifist. I realize it's sometimes right to fight, but it's often misused. And then there's this reductio ad Hitlerim, Godwin's law breached all the time. Goodness. Well, I hope it would never happen again. But sadly, there are many tyrants in the world. And then we're told, you've got to take them on. Well, then we'd have the Third World War. So you can't remember Iraq War, the liberation of Iraq in 2003. Oh, let's not fight. Okay, but then you have to leave them under this Nazi-like regime. Goodness. So these same people who say, well, the terrorists you've been fighting all the time. Right, thank you for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate to PayPal, georgecallan790gmail.com. Goodbye.